Warum geht es mir das ja? In der Name von Assalamu'alaikum. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Zena Uttale Sayam Pagadamayam Dadati Sapandanti Kam Mandra Kapadu Vrascha Kipasandu Vaihi Pitra Pritaram Bhagani Bhu Vrasne Vila Vanama Whatever you want to take out of the bag.
I've already done it.
Okay. You can tell the bag scrunching all at once.
Find me dirty.
Huh?
Find me dirty.
Just like. So this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the 24th chapter, is entitled Worshipping Govardhan Hill. One of the most famous, the beginning of one of the most famous, important, and sweetest pastimes of Krishna. And along with the residence of Vrindavan, pastimes of Krishna means along with his devotees, the residence of Vrindavan. And of course, this 10th canto of the Bhagavatam especially deals with Krishna's activities with the residents of Vrindavan, his most intimate devotees. So this pastime, this activity, takes up and continues straight from the previous pastime where Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys were tending the cows in the fields by the Jamuna near the border of Mathura. And there, the wives of the Brahmins came and saw them. And then the Brahmins themselves, by the association of their wives, after they actually became completely spiritualized. They, practically speaking or actually speaking, they ended up with spiritual bodies. That means eternal bodies, by which, and that is required for which one to associate with Krishna with, because just as we cannot approach fire with our earth bodies, because the earth and the fire are incompatible, it keeps us far away. So similarly, we cannot approach Krishna with this these gross bhumi rupo, earth, water, fire, metal. We cannot approach Krishna with these bodies composed of these material elements, nor can we approach Krishna with the mind. We need a spiritual body. We need a purity. So these wives of the Brahmins became very pure, completely pure, and therefore they could associate with Krishna. And their husbands, the Brahmins, were performing the sacrifices, we heard. They also became pure by the association of their wives. So, if you remember, the Brahmins wished to go and see Krishna because he was nearby in the Ashoka Grove, but they didn't. Why? They were afraid of Kamsa. Krishna. Huh? Yes. And they were afraid for their lives. They were afraid they were going to be killed. So Krishna had actually inspired that fear because he had a different plan for associating with these persons. And that will be revealed right now. So in the first verse of the 24th chapter, Sri Sukhu Vacha Sukadeva Goswami is speaking this to Maharaj Prakrit, who has only a few days left in his life. In his material life. And if we think about this circumstance surrounding the telling of the pastime by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prakrit, he's hearing, Maharaj Prakrit is hearing how these
how that one Brahmani
lady, she had given up her affection for her family, and then in fact, upon hearing about Krishna from the other Brahmani ladies who returned from seeing Krishna, she gave up her body. She was completely detached from her body. How again? Just by hearing about Krishna, by developing her attachment to Krishna, her attachment to her gross material body was evaporated. So we, in our conditioned state, we think that is very peculiar, very dangerous and very frightening to give up attachment to our body. But in fact, if we remain attached to our material body, and this is the greatest intoxication in this world or in existence, this dehatma buddhi, the consciousness, bodily consciousness, if we remain attached to this body, oh, how we will suffer. And it is not some people will suffer, everyone must suffer due to attachment to the body. Yehi samspasaja bhoga dukkha yona yehivate adyantamanta kanteya nateshu ramate buddha. Because everything connected to the body and our relationship with the body has a beginning and it will have an end. And when we become attached to something that has an end, just like if I rent a car and I start thinking, oh, this is a wonderful car, and I become very attached to it, then when I have to return it, and then it is painful. When I have to leave a wonderful place, I go on a vacation and have the time of my life, even though it's wonderful, leaving it causes pain. So what to speak of the real attachment, the greatest attachment to the body? At the time of death, that is the most painful experience. So therefore, the wise person uses his life properly, not so much to gain detachment from matter, but to gain his attachment, his prema bhakti, his love for Krishna. And then detachment from matter happens automatically because it is artificial. It is not real. Nahanyate hanyamani sharire. The soul, the person, does not die when the body dies. Dhiras taktara namuyate. The wise person is not bewildered by the different changes of body. And even now, and we see this, that when one becomes old, there is such a tendency to lament for one's youth. When one didn't have wrinkles, when one had hair, when one had strength, and when one was attractive. And you see this, the whole cosmetic makeup industry is based on this. So the Matajis, they'll paint their faces in such a way that they'll again look young, lamenting the loss of attractiveness. They dye their hair, lamenting the loss of attractiveness. They wear wigs, lamenting their loss of attractiveness. The men wear, what is it called? Toupee. What did you call it, Tiki?
Toupee.
Toupee, it's a good name for it, yeah? Toupee. Because you have to pay if you want to get it. And if you're attached to your body and your hair, you have to pay. You have to pay with so much suffering. So much suffering. So therefore, Sukadev Goswami is speaking this to Maharaj Prakrit, who's hearing. He's hearing, he only has a few more days left. Terrifying for most people that they think they're going to die in a few days, as if we're all not going to die. But to know that we're going to die in a few days is terrifying. So when Maharaj Prakrit hears
how this exalted Brahmani gave up her body, not to die, but to associate with Krishna, her spiritual body. That must have been so encouraging to him. So, Sukadev Goswami, Sri Sukha Uvacha, Bhagavan Appi Tatraiva Baladeva Samyuta Apashyan Nivasan Gopan Indra Jaga Kvito Jaman. So, Sukadev Goswami said to Maharaj Prakrit, Bhagavan Appi Tatraiva. In that same place, also in that same place where he was, in that village, where the Brahmanis and the Brahmins were performing that sacrifice, in that same place, Tatra Eva, Baladeva, Samyuta, along with Baladev, who joined him at that time, Apashyat Nivasam Gopam, he saw that the coward men who were staying there, Indra Jaga Kritodyaman, they were making great endeavor to perform a sacrifice to please Lord Indra, the demigod. Indra, the deva, very powerful demigod. And like everyone else who has power, there's always a tendency to become proud, and pride means illusion. Illusioned. Tendency to be illusioned. And therefore, Mahaprabhu has said that if you want to become a devotee, you have to remove all false pride. It means you have to remove your illusion and understand that you're a tiny, insignificant servant of Krishna. Mamai vangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. So therefore Mahaprabhu said, Trinada Pisuni Trina Turoda Pisina Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadhari. If you want to chant Krishna's names, you have to accept a position where you're dependent on Krishna always. That means no pride. Feeling that we are insignificant and fully dependent. Go to take Varanam Tata. So while staying at that very place with his brother Baladev, Lord Krishna happened to see the coward men busily arranging for a sacrifice to Indra. Here's the purport here. And then we'll read what Srila Jiva Goswami says. According to Srila Sridhar Swami and other acharyas, the word tatra eva in this verse indicate that Lord Krishna stayed in the village of the Brahmins whose wives had satisfied him by their devotion. Thus he gave his mercy to those Brahmins as well as to their chaste wives who had no one to associate with except their husbands. So Krishna went there. They could not go to him, but Krishna went to them so that they could actually see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that place, the coward men, headed by Lord Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, was somehow or another preparing an elaborate sacrifice to Lord Indra, and Lord Krishna reacted as follows. The comment of Jiva Goswami, very short but very pointed. Together with, there's some in the beginning, we won't read the whole comment. Together with Baladev, where is that Baladevena? Together with Baladev, Samyuta, joined with Baladev, refers to the fact that he, Sri Krishna, can sometimes forgive such things as worship of the demigods. But Baladev, his greatest devotee, cannot. Because Baladev knows that everyone should only worship Krishna, Sarvadamam Pityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. So Nanda, or as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, had engaged the coward men in preparing the paraphernalia for a sacrifice to Indra. So everyone was very, very busy performing this sacrifice to please Lord Indra. Second verse. Being the omniscient super soul, what does omniscient mean? He knows everything. He knows everything. We're all thinking different things right now. And Krishna knows as the super soul, the Paramatma, Upadrastanamantacha Bhaktabhukta Maheshwara. He's the Upadrasta, the overseer, and also the Anumata, the permitter. So being the omniscient super soul, tad abhigya, abhigya means that he knows everything, api bhagavan, that supreme lord, sarvatma, the super soul within everyone's heart, sarvadarshana, he understands everything, he's omniscient, prasraya, anvananto aprichad. So he bowed down very humbly. This is the super soul. This is the Lord Krishna, the supreme Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Sayam. He bowed down humbly to his father and Vridhan Nanda Puragamam. He inquired, Nanda Puragaman. He inquired from the elders who were headed by Nanda Maharaj very humbly. Here's the translation. Being the omniscient super soul, the Supreme Lord Krishna already understood the situation, yet he still humbly inquired from the elders headed by his father, Nanda Maharaj. Now, why did Krishna do this? What is the purpose of what we're going to hear right now? And Krishna is going to ask some questions, then he's going to hear Nanda Maharaj's answers, then he's going to speak his own philosophy, which is not Vaishnava philosophy. He's not going to speak the same philosophy that he spoke to Krishna, to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's not going to speak the same philosophy that he spoke to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. He's going to speak the philosophy of Jaimini Rishi, this Karma Mamangsa philosophy. That work is the highest. Now, why is Krishna going to do this? So the purport here will explain, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will explain this even clearer, and we should keep this in mind during this entire section. Lord Krishna was eager to enact his pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill. He was eager to lift Govardhan Hill as his pastime. And he was eager for that and to defeat the false pride of Indra. And thus he cleverly inquired from his father about the imminent sacrifice. So there are two reasons given here. He wanted to lift Govardhan Hill and have that pastime, and he wanted to diminish the pride of Indra. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Krishna knew all about the sacrifice because he had seen it many times before. As Paramatma, Sarvatma, he was inspiring the Vrijbasis to perform the sacrifice. Yet, being eager to enact his pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, Krishna cleverly inquired from his father about the imminent sacrifice. Krishna is called Sarvadarshana because he could see the future, wherein he would smash in his pride and enjoy pastimes with his loving devotees for 7 days. This is the purpose. I think there's another mention later on. No, maybe not, of other purposes. But he wanted to enjoy pastimes with his loving devotees, wherein they all had the opportunity to be under Govardhan Hill together for 7 days, not being bothered by hunger, not being bothered by thirst or any bodily necessities. They had the opportunity to simply look at Krishna, and Krishna had their association. There was no stoppage of days and nights in Vrindavan. How difficult it was, because during the daytime the cowherd boys and the cows would be so happy because they would be with Krishna, and the gopis and the cowherd men, the elderly gopis and the younger gopis, they would be so sad because during the day Krishna would be out, and then the boys would come back with Krishna, and the cows would go into the big cow shed, and the boys would go to their homes, and Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj would be so happy they would be with Krishna. But all the rest of the residents of Vrindavan, they couldn't see Krishna, so they weren't happy. So this continuous meeting and separation and meeting and separation. But during Govardhan Leela, everyone simply had the chance to stare at Krishna for 7 days straight. Open the door a little bit, because it's cold. And enjoy the wonderful pastimes of being protected by Krishna on the Govardhan Hill. So Krishna was eager for this pastime to go on, so therefore he inquired from his father, although he was Sarvatman, Sarvadarshan, he knew everything, and he was the super soul. He inquired from his father as to what he was doing. So in text 3 through 7, Krishna's prayers or Krishna's inquiries are there. Very, very intelligent inquiries. My dear father, kindly explain to me what this great endeavor of yours is all about. And also remember, Krishna has inspired them to perform the sacrifice. And at the same time, he's in the presence of the Brahmins who couldn't go and see Krishna, and also their wives who so much wanted to be with Krishna. So Krishna is accomplishing many things. So what is the purpose of this great endeavor of yours? What is it meant to accomplish? Is this a ritualistic sacrifice? Then, if it is, for whose satisfaction is it intended? And by what means is it going to be executed? How will you gain the proper result? Is it a ritual? What's the purpose of it? Is it something from the Shastra? Or is it just something that the local people do? What are you doing, O Father? He respectfully said, please tell me about it, O Father. I have a great desire to know, and I'm ready to hear in good faith. Certainly no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities, because saintly personalities have nothing to protect. We keep a secret because we don't want other people to know our secret out of fear, very often. But what do saintly personalities fear? They have something which cannot be taken from them. It is their... there's two kinds of saintly personalities. One, the Gyanavadis, and the devotees. So especially the devotees have something very wonderful. Very especially wonderful. And there's no fear. It is the fearless path. One cannot lose it. So certainly no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities who see all others as equal to themselves, who have no conception of mine or another's, and who do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral. They see the equality of all living entities. No question of this one's my friend and this one's my enemy. No. Dira dira jana priya priya karo. Dear to everyone. Purport. Lord Krishna's father might have thought that his son was a mere child and thus could not properly question the validity of a Vedic sacrifice. But the Lord's clever statement here would certainly have convinced Nanda Maharaj that Sri Krishna was making a serious, not a whimsical inquiry, and that a serious answer should thus be given. He's asking in a very, he's such a young boy at this time, and yet he's asking very intelligent questions. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the fourth verse as follows. If Nanda Maharaj answered, We are too busy. We are busy preparing for the sacrifice we're about to perform. What are you doing, Father? Then Krishna would ask, what is the purpose of this sacrifice? Who is the demigod to be worshipped through the sacrifice? Who will perform it and with what materials? Technical questions. Nanda Maharaj said, you are but a mere child. Why are you asking such questions? How old was Krishna at this time? Huh? Like that, 7 years old, just a boy? Krishna replies to that, as Mr. Chakravarti Thakur says, by saying, because I have a great desire, Mahakama, a great desire to know what the meeting can be. As you are showing great expectations, as you are working in a great way, therefore please tell me. You are endeavoring so hard to perform this sacrifice, so therefore I want to hear it naturally. I want to hear what you are doing. And then Krishna says, one who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. Even if Nanda Maharaj did not see friends, enemies, and neutral parties as entirely equal, Lord Krishna, being Nanda Maharaj's son, was certainly a most trustworthy friend and should therefore not be left out of intimate discussions. When you're having an intimate discussion, you don't discuss intimate personal things amongst people you don't know or your enemies. But Krishna was the dearest friend. He was the son, most trusted person. In other words, Nanda Maharaj might have thought that as a householder, he could not act on the highest saintly platform, which was what Krishna was saying before. Saintly persons don't see, discriminate between who is friend or enemy, but here he's saying that I'm your son, basically, and a son can hear. There's never any difficulty with the son, so he can hear all the secrets, so don't stop telling me for that reason. In other words, Nanda Maharaj might have thought that as a householder he cannot act on the highest saintly platform, and thus Lord Krishna furnished additional reasons why his father should trust him and reveal the entire purpose of the sacrifice. According to Sridhar Jiva Goswami, Nanda Maharaj stood silent, doubting his position of parental aloofness. Since Garga Muni had predicted that his son would be equal to Narayan in his qualities, and the young boy had already conquered and killed many powerful demons. Of course, the father wasn't sure he should tell him, but then he realized, oh, this boy is extraordinary. Garga Muni has said that he is equal to Narayan, and he's showing such incredible power already, even though he is only a 7-year-old boy. Exceptional. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, anticipating that one of the coward men may say, this is a private affair. We should not tell a small boy, because small boys only have little intelligence. Krishna uttered statements that reveal that he is very learned. Krishna said, those who are of good character see all other people on the same level as themselves. They do not distinguish between friends, enemies, and neutral parties. Therefore, you should trust me and reveal the entire purpose of the sacrifice. Nanda Maharaj, but we are householders and we cannot follow such standards of saintly behavior. To answer that objection, Krishna says, one who is indifferent may be avoided like an enemy. But one should have faith in the friend as one's own very own self. And I am more than a friend. I am an intimate family member. I'm your son. Therefore, you can tell me. 6. When people in this world perform activities, sometimes they understand what they're doing. This is what Krishna is saying. And sometimes they don't understand what they're doing. Those who know what they are doing achieve success in their work, whereas ignorant people do not. So he's probing. I want to see if you know what you are doing, or you just, because so often we do things ritualistically, especially religious things. We're offering something or another, but we don't know why. We don't know what the purpose is. In other words, our consciousness is not right. And to get the proper result from an activity, the consciousness has to be right.
Therefore, it's called Krishna consciousness.
And what are the activities of Krishna consciousness? What's the proper consciousness? We are doing this for Krishna's pleasure. And ya vilasita sanyam jnana kama anavrita. Anakulena Krishna anasyalam, Krishna anasyalam. To please Krishna. So if we don't even know what the purpose is, then what is the chance of our getting the proper consciousness? There's no chance. If we think the if we don't know that the purpose is to please Krishna, and we think that the purpose is to free me from difficulty or this or that or anything, or to make even me happy, then we don't actually understand. So without understanding, there's no question of applying what we should understand. So that's what Krishna is saying. If you want success, you have to know what the purpose is. Purport. The Lord herein, and the purport here is basically what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in his comment. The Lord herein informs his father that people should perform a particular ceremony or activity only after thoroughly understanding it through discussion with friends. We should not be blind followers of tradition. If a person doesn't even know what he's doing, how can he be successful in his work? This essentially is the Lord's argument in this verse. Since Sri Krishna, as the young child of Nanda, would naturally be expected to show enthusiasm for his father's religious activities, it was the father's duty to give the son a thorough explanation of the ceremony. In the final verse of Krishna's question is, such being the case, this ritualistic endeavor of yours should be clearly explained to me. Otherwise, how will I understand it? You have to pass on this tradition to me. And if I don't understand it, how will I do it properly? Perhaps you understand it, you're doing it properly, but how will I understand it unless you explain it to me? Is it a ceremony based on scriptural injunctions or simply a custom of ordinary society? Now, in the next verses from 8 to 12, Nanda Maharaj will reply. And then from 13 to 23, Krishna will reply to what Nanda Maharaj says. So first 8 to 11, where Nanda Maharaj answers Krishna's questions. Nanda Maharaj replied, the great Lord Indra, he even calls him Bhagawan Indra. Parjanya is the name of Indra that refers to him pouring the rain down, the Lord of Rain. Parjanya Bhagavan Indra Megas Tasyat Mamuttaya Te abhi vasanti bhutanam prinanam jivanam paya. Nanda Maharaj replied, the great Lord Indra is the controller of the rain. The clouds are his personal representatives. They come from him, and he controls the rain, and the clouds do the work of pouring the rain. And they directly provide rainwater, which gives happiness and sustenance to all creatures. Rain, we see that in the summer, the grass, everything dries up when there is no water, no rain. And then the rain comes and everything comes to life and turns green. So he's saying naturally, since Indra is the controller of that, naturally, we should appease Indra. He gives us so much. We should please him. Short purport. Without clean rainwater, the earth could not possibly provide food or drink for anyone, nor can there be cleanliness. Thus, it would be difficult to overestimate the value of rain. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in text 8, short comment. In this verse, Nanda Maharaj gives the logic behind the worship, because he was asked, what is the purpose of your worship? So he begins explaining. Nanda Maharaj said, this is a local custom. not exactly from Shastra saying that we should do this. This is a local custom. And he will say that later directly in the verse. Indra sends the rain, which is pleasing, and gives life to all living entities, even the grass on the ground. So therefore, in text 9, not only we, my dear son, but also many other men worship Indra, who is the Lord and Master of the rain-giving clouds. We offer him grains and other paraphernalia of worship produced through his own discharge in the form of rain. So he's explaining everything to Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. Nanda Maharaj is affectionately addressing Krishna with the word tata, which means, my dear son. The hint is, through the mercy of demigods like Indra, I have attained a qualified son like you. Therefore, you should not oppose this action. In this sacrifice, there should be no false pride. We worship Indra with materials created by Indra's rain, just as one worships the Ganga with Ganga water. Text 10. By accepting the remnants of sacrifice performed to Indra, people sustain their lives and they accomplish the threefold aims of life, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Karma, artha, and? Nope. He didn't mention moksha. Dharma. Religious activity. Economic development and sense gratification come. Thus, because the idea is religiosity, because very different from the way that people think nowadays, people who are more pious think that if you act religiously, dharma, people don't know generally the purpose of religion, of dharma. They think it is artha, or to gain wealth. And people don't know similarly the purpose of wealth. People think that the purpose of wealth is just sense enjoyment. That's not the purpose of wealth. So it's dharma, religiosity, to get wealth, to get karma, satisfies one's material desires. So by accepting the remnants of sacrifice performed to Indra, people sustain their lives and accomplish the threefold ends of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Thus, Lord Indra is the agent responsible for the fruit of success of industrious people. So through sacrifice, those who work hard get results. And then they can maintain themselves, they can perform their religious activities, they gain their wealth, and they become satisfied. Purport. One might object that people sustain themselves by farming, industry, and so on, not by sacrifice. But as previously mentioned, all humans and non-human endeavors depend on food and drink, which cannot be produced without ample rain. As Prabhupada would say, you cannot eat nuts and bolts produced in the factories. You can eat chips, but not computer chips. You can't. Those things produced in the factories, that is not what sustains us. It's the rain, because without the rain, even if one isn't a vegetarian, the animals, they are eating the grass, which is dependent upon the rain. So we are dependent on food, which isn't produced in factories, it's produced by the farms, by the rain. But as previously mentioned, all humans and non-human endeavors depend on food and drink, which cannot be produced without ample rain. By the word trivaga, Nanda further points out that the prosperity achieved through sacrifice for Indra is meant not merely for sense gratification, but also for religiosity and economic development. Unless people are well fed, it is difficult for them to execute their duties. And without performance of duty, it is very difficult to be religious. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments to, on text 10, short comment. Nanda Maharaj said, people sustain their lives by the remnants of sacrifice performed to Indra. Human life is not meant just for sense gratification, but for attaining the goals of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. So Nanda Maharaj is speaking in this, although he's acting as if he was a materialistic person. This is just Krishna's Leela. And Krishna is going to smash this philosophy that Nanda Maharaj is proposing as the purpose of the sacrifice. But not with Krishna conscious philosophy, but with different philosophy. Because Krishna only wants one thing. He's not trying to establish the philosophy of Krishna consciousness here. But he's just trying to, his purpose is to have the exciting pastime of Govardhan, of Govardhan Leela. So anyway, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur saying, from rain comes grains, from grains comes sustenance of life, from sustenance of life comes religiosity, from religiosity comes effort and action, because the clouds are the root of Dharma, Artha and Kama. We should worship Indra, the Lord of the clouds. We shouldn't be ungrateful. And this is the great sin of Kali Yuga. Everyone is ungrateful. So he's proposing something very religious, Nanda Maharaj is. But Krishna doesn't want this level of religion. He wants the highest. So this religious principle, and this is the final words that Nanda Maharaj will say, this religious principle is based on sound tradition. Anyone who rejects it out of lust, enmity, fear, or greed will certainly fail to achieve good fortune. Short purport here. If a Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur rather short. This verse speaks of the dire result of not worshipping Indra. If one neglects his religious duties out of lust, greed, fear, or enmity, he will not attain any benefit now or in the future. So Nanda Maharaj is speaking proper religious duty, but Krishna is going to reject it. But for a different purpose, a purpose even different from what he's going to speak. So here now, Sukadeva Goswami, in a transition verse, he says, when Lord Krishna, Keshava, heard the statement of his father Nanda and other senior residents of Braja, he addressed his father as follows, to arouse anger in Lord Indra. So Krishna, this was Krishna's purpose. Because his twofold purpose in the Govardhan Leela, where he lifts Govardhan Hill, one is to remove the pride of Indra, and the second, and even the most important, is that he wanted to perform the pastime by which he would lift Govardhan Hill and the residents of Vrindavan would be with him for 7 or 8 days consecutively. So he wanted to arouse Indra's anger, so Indra would, in anger, cause retribution and attack the residents of Vrindavan, and then Krishna would teach him something, and thereby, by that teaching, remove his pride. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 12. Krishna's aim in provoking Indra's anger was to break the mountain of his false pride. By lifting Govardhan Hill, Sri Krishna would thus initiate a blissful annual festival called Govardhan Puja. And he would further enjoy the pleasant pastime of dwelling for 7 days beneath the hill with his loving devotees. So three things he did, not just two. By this. And the second one is he is establishing the festival of Govardhan Puja, which is a very, very, it's just a happy festival. These are the reasons for Krishna's words. Text 13. Now Krishna is going to speak, and he's going to challenge the very religious philosophy given by Nanda Maharaj with this karma mamamsa philosophy. This is, he's doing it to minimize Indra, to arouse Indra's anger. And this will be in the next 11 verses. So Lord Krishna said, "It is by the force of karma alone that a living entity takes birth. And it is by karma alone that he meets his destruction. His happiness, his distress, fear and sense of security all arise as an effect of karma." We often speak like this to people. This is just karma. It is not your work alone. This is just karma. The reactions of deeds you've previously done, good and bad, something happens to you. It is your karma. But the thing that is missing is that karma is not independent. Ultimately, Krishna, as we said, upadrashtanumantatra, he is the permitter and the overseer as the supersoul. He permits and oversees everything, even someone's karma. For example, although it is karma, behind the karma is Krishna. For example, say in this life, or in previous life, maybe I've done something terrible. Something terrible. And that one terrible act may cause hundreds and hundreds of births if I've killed a sacred animal or something. I may have to take birth and suffer for thousands of births. And maybe that one act of doing that took me 10 minutes or a half hour. So for one half hour of activity, maybe I have millions and millions of years. Millions of years of suffering. So maybe in that one life, I've accrued billions and billions and billions of years of suffering, and that's only from one life. So say then I take a birth in this world, and I have this incredible, huge stock of karma. Huge. Now, which karma do I get? Which particular reactions from which particular birth do I reap during this particular life? That is up to Krishna. There is parabdha karma and aparabdha karma. Parabdha karma means that which is allotted to you with this particular body. A parabdha karma means the huge, huge bag of karma that we have to carry with us, that awaits us in the future, good and bad. But which karma, which reactions, both pap and punya, sinful and pious, do we have to get in this life? That is arranged and organized by the supersoul. So despite the fact that karma is there, yet the position of supersoul as the ultimate controller of karma, as the permitter, is still higher. But Krishna is not going to speak that. What to speak of explaining the position of the demigods. He's only going to speak about the karma point. And he's going to explain that here's your karma, and the demigods are even forced to give you your karma. You work in a particular way, and they have to, they're obliged to give you the fruit of your work. So your work is more powerful than them. So the demigods are subordinate to karma or work. So just do your work. Don't worry about the demigods. Don't worry about Indra. Like a paid employee. That's what he's saying. Indra's not significant. Say if you go, like when you get on the bus or something, you pay a little money and the bus driver has to let you on.
You don't have to worship the bus driver.
You just do your work. Just do the right thing. You do your work. Follow the system. And the bus driver is obliged to do the right thing. So Krishna is going to speak in this way. It is by the force of karma that a living entity takes birth. It is by karma alone that he meets his destruction. His happiness, distress, fear, and a sense of security all arise as the effects of karma. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this text. Because Krishna is doing this again, because he wants to make Indra happy, he's minimizing him. Like if you criticize, if you minimize all the bus drivers, they'll go on strike. So that's what Indra is going to do, they'll retaliate. If you say bus drivers, they're not important. They're just working. You're paying them, they're working. Then they'll go on strike. So Krishna wants to make Indra angry. Jiva Goswami says, well, first, Srila Sridhar Swami says, first Krishna ridicules the demigods by using, he makes fun of them and minimizes them, by utilizing the philosophy of Karmavad in the verse beginning Karmana. If the coward men object, how can the achievements of fruitive results be gained simply from karma, which is inert, it doesn't have any consciousness? Krishna replies, just see the concocted faith of those who have not properly studied karma mamamsa. When one has understood the statements from the Vedas, how ritual activities generate fruitive results, then what remains not understood? He criticizes them. And Jiva Goswami says, Lord Krishna was thinking. And here's the other reason why Krishna is speaking. Why are these personages, who are my eternal associates, who are appearing as my father and so forth, why are they so caught up in the worship of Indra? Although the idea of taking away the pride of Indra was thus in the Lord's mind, still in order to protect the human-like character of his pastimes, he avoided revealing his idea by resorting to Karmavad philosophy. In other words, he wanted to show them, why are you doing this? Of course, this is all pastime of Krishna. But he wanted to also, at the same time, protect. He did not want to say, you're my eternal associates, and you're only required to worship the Supreme Lord, that's me. Because he's doing Naralila. So this would conflict with the mood of Vraja. So therefore, to protect the Lila, he preached this Karmavad philosophy, Karma Mamamsa. And thus he speaks the verse beginning with Karma. Karmana. Now, text 14. Even if there is some supreme controller, so first Krishna says it's all karma, it's all work, but now he says, even if there is some supreme controller who awards others the results of their activities, he must also depend upon a performance engaging in activities. After all, there is no question of being the bestower of fruit of results unless fruit of activities have actually been performed. Living beings in this world are forced to experience the consequences of their own particular previous work. Since Lord Indra cannot in any way change the destiny of human beings, which is born of our own nature, why should people worship him? Every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature, and thus he must follow that nature. This entire universe, with all its demigods, demons, and human beings, is based on the conditioned nature of the living beings. There's good purports to these, but you get a sense of the Krishna's logic if we read the verses all at once. Because it is the karma that causes the conditioned living entity to accept and then give up different high and low grade material bodies, The karma is his enemy, friend, and neutral witness, his spiritual master and controlling lord. It is karma, it is work, that is everything. And I remember when I was living in Hong Kong, I would see this a little sign on many of the Indian businessmen's desk: work is worship. It's basically the same philosophy. You just work and work and work and work, and then everything will come by the strength of that. Even the demigods, if you work properly, are forced to give you the results of your work. And this is all born of your conditioned nature. And therefore, in text 18 he says, one should seriously worship work itself. It is karma. And actually what Krishna is saying, he'll explain it in more detail later, it's actually very, very sweet, because he's saying that everyone has their conditioned nature. There are Brahmins. What is their work? They study, they teach, they worship. And there's Kshatriyas. They rule, they administrate. But what are we, O Father? We are cowherdsmen. Vaishakama Sabhajam Krishigoraksha Banijam Vaishakama Sabhavajam. So what are we? What is our work born of our nature that we should worship? We are cowards, men. And our work is to take care of the cows. So therefore we should worship our work, which means we should worship the cows. So that's what Krishna is bringing you to here. And therefore, on the Govardhan Puja day is also Gopastami, where the cows are worshipped. Therefore, we should seriously worship work itself. A person should remain in the position corresponding to his nature, and he should perform his own duty. Indeed, that by which we may live nicely is really our worshipable deity. People like this philosophy. Let's work and enjoy. If one thing is actually sustaining our life, but we take shelter of something else, it's our work that's sustaining our life. Everyone knows this. Without work, you can't sustain. Of course, in Australia, you can. Just go on the dole or something. But it's our work that sustains our life. So we should worship and appreciate our work, our duties. And our duty, of course, is the cow protection. But if we take shelter of something that isn't sustaining us, neglecting that which does sustain us, how can we achieve any real benefit? So it's not Indra, a demigod, who's sustaining us. If we perform, do our work properly, the demigods, they are forced by the system to award us what we deserve by our work. So it is our work that is the essence. Work is worship. Worship is work. So if we don't worship the real cause of our benefit, we would be like an unfaithful woman who can never achieve any actual benefit by consorting with her paramour. The Brahmana maintains his life by studying and teaching the Vedas, the members of the royal order by protecting the earth, the Vaishyas by trade, the Sudras by serving the higher twice-born classes. Now Krishna's going to explain the position of those who he's speaking to, the Vaishyas, Nanda Maharaj and himself. In detail, he says the occupational duties, this is 21, of the Vaishyas are conceived in four divisions: farming, commerce, cow protection, and money lending. And out of these four, we, as a community, are always engaged in cow protection. The cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe, and through sexual combination, it causes it to become full of variety. Impelled by the material mode of passion, the clouds pour down their rain everywhere. And by this rain, all creatures gain their sustenance. What has the great Indra to do with this arrangement? So we should worship our work, and this is the general principle. Everyone should worship their work. And for us specifically, we are cowherdsmen, Goraksha. Our life is for the cows. They give us our sustenance. And as for the rain, this is just the modes of material nature working. What does Indra have to do with it? My dear father, our home is not in the cities or the towns or villages. Being forest dwellers, we always live in the forest and on the hills. So he's moving towards the point that we should worship Govardhan Hill. Therefore, and he's going to, why don't we end right here, and this is the basic point, the philosophy that Krishna is saying, and the Acharyas, they comment that, why are we worshipping Indra? This is all the modes of nature. Does the ocean worship Indra? Do the mountains and hills worship Indra? And yet rain falls on the ocean, rain falls on the hills, rain falls on the forest. So what is the need to worship the demigods? So in this way, Krishna is making his Govardhan Lila occur. Let me just see if there's any comments here, because I went over that quite quickly. Most of them are quite philosophical, just having to do with justifying this and how Nanda Maharaj would reply and what Krishna would reply to that. Nanda Maharaj might say, how can there be success of a sacrifice where the ingredients are offered to the demigods? Because Krishna is saying that you can perform sacrifices, we do our worship, but what does this have to do with Indra? We don't need to worship him. So Krishna says, well, how can we perform sacrifices if we don't accept the importance of the demigods? And Krishna says, the demigods are only karmanga, secondary assistance to the karma itself. The most important thing is the work. According to the philosophy of hetuvad, causality. In this way, the demigods are reconciled. They're there, but the most important thing, the object of our attention and worship, should be our work, our karma. Our karma, our work, is our deity. Comment to Vishnu of Chakravarti Thakur. And Krishna says, for us, cows are worshipable. And the word Savata in text 23, what does Indra have to do with this? Indicates that the clouds magnanimously send their rain even on the ocean, the rocks, and barren land where there is no apparent necessity for sweet water, and they don't perform sacrifices, and it still happens. So what need do we have to worship Indra? He's secondary to the work itself. Again, Krishna is trying to make Indra angry by this, and also he's trying to make the Govardhana Puja ceremony establish that as a blissful yearly event. And the third reason is he wants to be with the residents of Vrindavan under Govardhan Hill for 7 days to enjoy pastimes. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
I
don't remember the name right now, but it's nearby. It's by a nearby village by the Yamuna. If you make a left at the Pago Baba Mandir, you will get there.
It's
not too far, but it's not too near.
Kovalam is bigger than.
It's bigger also. And also the, yeah. But it's not too far, but not too near. But that's where Krishna was, over there. And also in Vrindavan, time and distance serve Krishna's pastimes. It is not like this linear material world where time always gets in our way. And we are servants of time. And time is unstoppable. But, and distance is fixed. But in the spiritual world, it's not like that. Sometimes I've heard that Vrindavan is like a lotus flower with its different petals. And sometimes the petals contract and move to make the distances quite flexible. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Tomorrow we shall enter into the worship of Govardhan Hill. Krishna will first describe it, and then the worship will begin.